Okay, welcome back, everyone. Today we are going to do a Q&A, and these are some of my favorite episodes to do because I get to cover a lot of topics in one episode. And I'm probably going to have to break this into two different episodes because there are so many questions, which is awesome. I think before I get started, I did want to say just a little something about the climate of things right now, which you hear me talk about quite a bit. But as a lot of you know that have been in this space for a while, Peptide Sciences, which is one of the original research peptide companies, they've been around forever, had a really great reputation, probably based more on their longevity than I would say even how they did their testing, but that's a different conversation for a different day. But yeah, they shut down, and so it was kind of unexpected, and I'm getting a lot of emails and text messages about this, and so I kind of wanted to just touch on it briefly. The truth is, I don't know what happened, and unless you're really in that inner circle, which I am not, it's all speculation. I've heard everything from they were being put under scrutiny with all the regulatory people, which I don't think that's what happened with them. I do know that they took some of their peptides, like their GLPs, off their website. My personal opinion is they were priced really high. So they were really up there in regards to how they were pricing their products. And with a lot of competition out there and then their inability to keep their GLPs on their website, et cetera, that they just kind of threw in the towel. They didn't want to deal with it any longer. And this is a difficult industry to be in. We are constantly under scrutiny, constantly having to change things. A lot of you have noticed that I have not been posting on social media, and that's for a reason. A, I've been really busy, but honestly, the last few times I've posted, my stuff gets shut down or they will limit my access or shadow ban me for a while. And I've been a little bit hesitant to post. And so my goal is to kind of stay under the radar and be able to provide the podcast to you guys for information. And if you're a woman, you can join the Women's Peptide Collective on the school platform. And maybe I'm probably going to focus more on sending out information to you guys that way, as opposed to social media, because it just seems to be causing more problems than anything else. So you might see me post here and there, but it's going to look drastically different than, you know, I was doing it 4 or 5 days a week 6 months ago. So anyway, I don't know what all this means for the longevity of this space. I know that I'm going to continue to put one foot in front of the other and do what I can to be able to keep the Peptique up and running, keep West Wellness up and running. And we have a lot of exciting things coming up. And we are working really hard to stay within the guidelines that we need to stay within to ensure that happens. So all that being said, I don't want to waste any more time talking about all that. I want to dive into your questions. If you submitted a question and I did not answer it here, just know I'm probably saving it for another episode because I can only get through so many. So let's dive in. First question, I would like to start Epitalon, but get very nervous to start new peptides. Is there any risk to doing a lower dose? I tend to be sensitive to meds and peps. No, we say research peptide space for a reason. Is there a lot of data and a lot of science coming out about Epitalon, particularly in the Kapanen Russian studies? Yes. And a lot of the things that I read about it say that the information's being misinterpreted and the dosing's being misinterpreted. And there are some standard dosing protocols out there in the research peptide world. But I always tell people to go low and slow. So the only thing that you risk in going low and slow is not getting the maximum benefit from it. But everyone's unique on what that looks like. So if that's what works for you, then start low and slow and you should be good. Okay. All right. Here's another question. I was listening to Dave Asprey's podcast about peptides. And he and his guests talked about peptide pens being a game changer from using regular needles. I looked one up on Amazon and people were mentioning cartridges in their reviews. How do peptide pens work? And if someone wants to try them, how exactly do you use them safely? Okay, full disclosure, I've never used one. I actually have a couple of peptide pens that I bought for myself and my family members that I just haven't taken the time to look at it and put it all together. But what I will tell you, what I do know, is the cartridges are changed out. So to keep things sterile and that you change the cartridges when you change the peptide. And the needle is changed out as well. It's like a little screw-on needle. And so that is changed out as well. I think that's right. But again, like I said, I need to dig into this a little bit more. I am so used, call me old school, I'm so used to using just the standard insulin syringes, and they don't bother me. And so I just haven't taken the time to break that down. So I'm sorry, I can't answer that one really well. How many peptides can you cycle at a time? This is a great question. And I've cycled up to 5 at a time. I'm kind of like in the school of thought that maybe 3 at a time is ideal. Can you cycle more than that? Yes. You want to make sure that either the mechanisms of action for the ones you are cycling are either supportive of each other or very different. And then you need to pay attention to how you're feeling on those, and know how you respond to a peptide individually, meaning that peptide on its own, before you start stacking them with others. I think that's really important. I had someone that I did a consult with the other day, and I told them, don't try to do all these at once. You need to break them down. And people get excited, and I get it. I remember in the beginning phases when I was experimenting with peptides, I was so excited, I wanted to try them all. But she ended up starting to feel really bad because she was just overwhelming her body. So you definitely want to be careful. And then at that point, she didn't know which peptide was causing the problem. So I said, get off of all of them for a couple of weeks and then slowly start layering them back in one by one and cycle them a couple at a time once you know how you're responding to them. So you could be on this peptide journey for years before you cycle through all the ones that you want to cycle through. I'm still experimenting with combinations and things like that. So for whatever that's worth. Okay. I go through an emotional nootropic withdrawal when I stop taking tazobactam. Can I wean the dose down and then go immediately back on it? Yeah, I think you can. I think tazobactam, at least the ones that the peptide carries, come in a capsule, so you can't cut them in half. You might be able to find a supplier that has a lower dose, or you could take it maybe every other day instead of every day. Tazobactam's a pretty powerful one. Like, I struggle with that one a little bit, so I think you just need to be careful with it. So if you want to titrate down and then titrate back up and see how you do, then that's probably a good idea if you feel like that you're really struggling coming off of it. But you may try cycling it. So if you titrate down and up and allow your body to adjust, you may get to a point, and the goal would be to get to the point where you maybe don't need it as often. So I'm just throwing that out there. I'd personally use tazobactam only when I feel like I need extra appetite control. I know some people use it more as a nootropic in the sense of with focus and things like that, but I don't really get that benefit from it that I'm noticing, at least. But it really does help suppress the appetite. So I usually use it on vacation or holiday, and I only use it during that period of time to help with that, so I don't totally make a pig out of myself in those situations. So again, everyone's unique. You have to play around with it and see what works for you. Okay, can you speak to the safety of using research peptides, specifically from the peptide? I've had a great experience so far with everything I've ordered, but there's so much noise and not ordering research peptides, and I get scared. This is a very common question and a very good question. And what I can tell you is that's the reason why the testing is so important, whether you buy from the peptide or whether you buy from some other place. And I did a whole podcast episode on this. You may want to go back and listen to that. At the end of the day, it is an individual choice on how comfortable you can get with it. Because I tell people all the time, look, if you're not comfortable with it, move on. And I get it. You're injecting something into your body that can be very intimidating and overwhelming. At the peptide, we do the standard COA that every research peptide company should be doing at a minimum, meaning we're testing it for identity. So if you're buying tesamorelin, you know you're actually getting tesamorelin. We test it for potency. So you know if you're getting a 10 milligram vial, you're actually getting 10 milligrams in it. That can shift a little bit. Sometimes you'll see a test that comes back a little less, sometimes a little more. That's normal. And purity. So our standard is 99% or higher, or it does not make it into our inventory. The other thing we do is we test for endotoxins. So that's a separate test that basically tests the safety to make sure that the product doesn't contain bacterial toxins that can cause dangerous reactions if injected. And they have to meet a minimum threshold to pass that test. And ours come back very, very, very low in relation to what the industry standard is. And the other thing that you want to make sure of is that when you look at that test, it's attached online to every product, that then you can go back to that third party testing lab and confirm the accuracy of that particular test, okay? So you know that it's not AI generated, it's actually authentic. And the other thing I will say that we do is that we don't buy really large batches and test really large batches. We buy smaller batches, 300 or less of every product, 300 vials or less of every product. And we do at least 2 samples of every product to make sure that it's not just one vial, that we're getting cohesive test results back. So that's what I can tell you about our philosophy and how we handle things. But again, if you're really nervous about it and you can't get over that hurdle, that really boils down to a personal choice. Okay, let's see, next question. Okay, I'm not taking any of the Morellans, but can any of the peptides increase your FSH levels to show post-menopause and drop estrogen levels? My last hormone panel had extreme changes in 3 months. Yes, kisspeptin is one that raises the FSH level, but not to the point that you're probably talking about. And what happens when you get into perimenopause, menopause, is it's very common for that drastic drop to happen in a very short period of time. I'm 50 years old and I'm very fortunate that my hormones are still at a very, very good level. I haven't had to start hormone replacement therapy, but I'm just kind of holding my breath because I know at any minute that's probably going to shift. And it probably will shift fairly quickly and feel like it's hit you out of nowhere. This is very common. I hear this from ladies all the time. I'm going to go out on a limb and say almost positively it's not a peptide causing this and more just the natural process of going through perimenopause and menopause. Okay. Is glutathione also, is it true that it should not be taken during the same cycle as JHKCU? Okay. Glutathione, I feel like the injectable glutathione should be cycled unless you're doing maybe one injection a week. Sometimes I will do more injectable glutathione because I'm feeling run down, or maybe I just got back from a trip and I feel like I need a detox, or I'm feeling a little under the weather. Sometimes I will utilize glutathione injectable that way. It's what I call a spicy injection. So it's not a fun one to inject. So it's not one that I do all the time. I take a liposomal glutathione supplement and the precursor sulforaphane to keep my glutathione levels up. And there's also a glutathione topical spray that I love that I did a podcast on ages ago, if you want to go back and try to find it, to keep my natural glutathione levels up. And the last time I did an organic acid test, my glutathione levels looked perfect. So I know that those methods work because I wasn't taking injectable form. I think you should cycle high dosing glutathione and not do that consistently. But if you want to do, you know, an injection or two a week on the lower end of the spectrum, I think that's totally fine. In regards to glutathione with GHKCU, you know, I know you're not supposed to take vitamin C with GHKCU. That can really mess with the copper part of it. I don't know about glutathione. I haven't heard that or read that anywhere. That doesn't mean it's not possible. If you think about glutathione is our master antioxidant and vitamin C is an antioxidant, you know, but they work very differently. So I think it's okay. I probably need to do some more research on that if I'm being honest though. Okay. I keep hearing different ideas around Solanke and Somatz and whether they have compounding effects. So do they either become more helpful the longer into the cycle you go, or do the effects last after the cycle is over? Okay, great question. Interesting thing about Solanke and Somatz is that often what I hear people report is that they get this really amazing benefit from it right out of the gate, and then it starts to kind of diminish as far as how they're feeling. I think what people aren't realizing is that it's a neuromodulator. It's not a stimulating type of thing in the brain. The key is that it changes signaling pathways and gene expression in the brain rather than just temporarily increasing neurotransmitter levels. So the benefits of it last far beyond when you're finished cycling it, okay? Because it's a neuromodulator, which is one of the things that's so awesome about it. So in theory, you should be able to benefit from the effects of it well after you've cycled it. But this is one that you want to cycle probably a couple of times a year. Silank in particular is one of my favorites. I also use it situationally when I'm feeling times of anxiety or stress, or I'm going through a bout of insomnia and not being able to sleep and calm my nervous system down. It's wonderful for that. So sometimes I won't even do a full cycle, although I do that. I try to do a cycle of it a couple times a year, but I just might get a vial out and just take it for a week to kind of calm my nervous system down. Instead of doing a full round of it. So I try to be intentional about my cycle, about cycling my peptides, but also know that this is one you can take situationally as well. But sidebar, let me say, if you're wanting that long-term effect from it, definitely you're going to get that from a cycle, not just taking it a couple of times. Okay, thymus and alpha 1, how are we using this? I'm not sure you mean by we, maybe the group. In general, keeping it on hand, then adding to stack when sick, or using precautionary throughout sick season. I think you can do all of those. Always have thymus and alpha 1 on hand with me. I always take it with me when I'm traveling, because when you're traveling, you're exposed to so many other things. And the second I'll feel something, you know, about to come on, I'll just start a round of it. So I always like to have it on hand. I always have it on hand in my peptide freezer. For the same reason, even when I'm home. And it is one that I cycle. I try to cycle it going into cold and flu season just to kind of really boost my immune system. So that's how I like to use it. People that have autoimmune disorders, that's something that they probably we'd want to cycle it a little differently, more, you know, a couple times throughout the year, as opposed I only cycle it through cold and flu, leading up to cold and flu season. If you or cancer, I have my best friend just recently finished treatment for breast cancer, and one of her doctors told her that she needed to get on it, and she takes it ongoing long-term, lower dose, but just ongoing long-term, because our immune system is what fights off the cancer cells. And when the immune system is no longer able to do that efficiently or effectively, that's when cancer rears its ugly head. And so there's a lot of different ways you can use it. It's an amazing peptide. I hope that didn't just confuse you more. Okay, this is a great question too. How come microdosing GLP-1s is a thing as being effective, but microdosing other peptides isn't? The thing with the GLPs is that when they first came out, like liraglutide, I'm not saying that right. It was like one of the original forms of these GLPs, and it wasn't nearly as effective as what we're seeing now. But they were daily injections. In fact, Saxenda was one of the first ones that came out, and it was a daily injection. And what they found is that people didn't adhere to it like they needed to for it to be effective, because it was every single day. So what they decided to do is change it up where that half-life of it was considerably longer, so you could take it once a week. And that was purely done for adherence to improve, so the results would be maximized on what the intended outcome was for. And so when it first started, I guess you could say they were microdosing it daily. And microdosing has become popular because, you've heard me say this a million times, because it's how our body naturally pulses things. If you look at like a bell curve, if you will, of a GLP, you inject it, and then you kind of have this upward trend for the first 48 hours of the strength of it in your system, and then it starts to slowly fall off. But then if you think about pulsing it every day, more like our natural body does, there's an argument there that that's going to work more effectively, because it's how our body is supposed to use it. So if you look at how we also take the other peptides, whether that be MOTC or one of the growth hormone ones, that's exactly what we're doing. We're microdosing it on a daily schedule, more like our natural body uses things. It's also why I'm not a big believer, like with MOTC, for example, giving these high mega doses three times a week. I also see that with NAD. I like to do smaller doses every day. So the whole idea of taking the GLP once a week was more about, in the clinical trials when it was being studied, it was more about adherence, so people would not forget to take it, and less about not microdosing it, if that makes sense. Because originally, that's how it was intended to be injected. Hope that makes sense. I feel like that was clear as mud. I apologize. Okay, will your hair serum have AHKCU in it? Yes, that's going to be the main component. And one of the things I will tell you is you will see some hair serums out there that have GHKCU and AHKCU. We intentionally decided not to add the GHKCU. A is a little bit redundant. And B, the AHKCU specifically simulates hair follicles. And so the GHKCU really isn't necessary in that particular format. So I'm really excited about that. It's taking way longer. The testing's taken way longer. We thought we were super close in getting it how we wanted it. And then the test came back and we had to reformulate it. So we are working on that. It should be out hopefully in the next month or two. Would love to be able to inject a B complex. Is that something the Peptiques feature? Possibly. We're always looking to add new things. A methylated B complex, I think, would be fantastic. So we'll see. Okay, some of these I've already answered. Okay, this is one I see all the time. I recently cycled off Retta after losing 25 pounds. Within 3 weeks, I gained 7 back. What in the world is going on? My appetite did increase some, but it was also very suppressed on Retta. Do I have to stay on Retta long term? This is such a hard question. I'm of the school of thought, because of the anti-inflammatory benefits and all the things that the GLPs have shown that they do, that staying on a low dose of it long term is really smart. I've noticed the times that I get off of it, my inflammation comes back fairly fast. And you kind of forget. You kind of forget how inflamed you were. And then all of a sudden, you know, your rings don't fit anymore and that sort of thing. And I remember the last time I cycled off it completely, just to keep receptor sensitivity going, I got back on it and was like, oh yeah, this is how amazing it is. This is what it does. Because it kind of slowly happens. It sounds like this was a very fast thing that happened with you. And sometimes the stuff is genetic. So you may be more insulin resistant than the average person, things like that. And you may be more prone to inflammation, and the combination of the two are causing you to put the weight back on very quickly. It's good to cycle down, if not completely off, every now and again. You could try doing Kide or Filgliprin, which is the oral GLP molecule. So it's not the actual peptide itself. Although if you really wanted to help with receptor sensitivity, you could do Kalantide. That would be the better one. And then cycle off that and get back on the Retta. So I can't answer that. What I can tell you is that it's unique to everybody. That is, you know, and it stays in your body for a long time. So the fact that you experienced that 3 weeks tells me that maybe you've got some other metabolic stuff going on. Normally people don't start gaining weight back for a month or so. Okay, let's see. I recently heard on Hunter Williams' podcast, big fan of his, that if you have a dysregulated nervous system, that TERS may be a better choice, tirzepatide may be a better choice than retatrutide because glycogen receptor. Okay, yes, I would say I'm one of those people that, and my daughter in particular, really had a bad experience with retatrutide and it dysregulating her nervous system. And so for those of us who are living in the fight or flight mode, which I'm constantly working on getting out of, have poor HRV, have poor sleep, you know, sleep recovery, I find that tirzepatide's the better choice. And it's just how that one component impacts all those things in our body. So I'll often get people that come to me and say, I started Retta and all of a sudden they have heart palpitations or their HRV tanks and they're not sleeping and they feel super restless at night. That's an indication that you may do better on over retatrutide. The other thing that I've heard people do, and I haven't tried this, but they take a really low dose of tirzepatide and then maybe like a microdose, and then midweek they would take a microdose of retatrutide to get a little bit of that third glycogen receptor activity that is what makes retatrutide so special. And some people do that so they don't get triggered so much by what's in retatrutide. Haven't tried that personally, but I've been reading some stuff about it lately, so it may be something that you check into, maybe something that I'll do a deeper dive on later. Let's see, sorry. Also, I'm a hairstylist, age 40, but peptides have reignited a love for science and human biology. I want to understand all the big words and receptors, don't we all? So I feel like I'm really understanding mechanisms and how it works. Where can someone like me start to educate myself to start understanding the science and language more deeply? I just read a book that I felt like was really good. I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head. I will try to post a link in the show notes to it because I feel like it was really spot on, at least with my philosophy on these things. So, you know, just listening to podcasts of people that you trust is a big one. You have to try to weed through the noise. I often hear a lot of things where I'm like, whoa. And it doesn't mean that person's wrong. It just may have a different way of thinking or different experience with it. So you have to be a little careful. But there's a lot of great books out there. I've read a ton of books over the years. And I've learned so much from working with people and how different people respond. And if you're on the school group, you're going to get a lot of the ladies talking about their experiences, which I think is awesome. I've learned so much from that. So it's not one thing. It's all the things combined together. And we're all learning all this stuff together. But I'm excited for you that you're getting into this world. Okay. How long can you be on melanotan? You could be on melanotan, not where you're doing it every day, like in a loading phase. I think it was last week that I did an episode on melanotan. And then I kind of take it throughout the summer when I want to keep my skin a little darker, and then I cycle off of it, but I don't take it every day. So I do the 2 to 3 day protocol throughout the summer, and then I get off of it. How long can you be on VIP? You know, VIP, I read different things on. It depends on what your issues are. Like if you're really struggling with colitis or something like that, you may want to do a longer cycle, 12, 16 weeks, something like that. My husband was dealing with some gastrointestinal stuff recently. And so he's been on it 6 weeks so far and doing really well. And I'm going to keep him on it for at least 8 to 10, and then he'll cycle off of it. Best protocol pre and post cosmetic surgery, when to stop all peptides, and what and when to start up again. Okay. So some of you know, like I just had a cosmetic procedure done. I had an encapsulation on one of my breast implants. So I went in and had that fixed and I got off everything for 2 weeks. That's what the doctor recommended. And in that situation, I'm going to listen. And then I waited about 2 weeks. I would say at least wait a week post-surgery to get started on any peptides because our body has this natural inflammatory response that tells our body to get into that healing mode. And these peptides are powerful anti-inflammatories. And so you don't want to suppress that in that beginning phase of healing. What happens is that after a few weeks, if our inflammation levels stay too high, then that has the opposite effect on healing. So that's why I really think 2 weeks is probably best, although some people start a week after. And then it starts to really help with the healing process of it. So 2 weeks before, 2 weeks after, I think is good. And Clo is my go-to for post-surgery peptides. Okay, this is a good one. I get questions on this all the time. What is the best way to reconstitute and then store AOD? And there are so many conflicting ways to do it. Should it be refrigerated before and or after reconstitution? Is it best to draw up all syringes at one time? How much acetic acid? What if it clumps? I know you've answered these, but I thought it'd make a good question for further clarification. Okay, so AOD is one that tends to gel, sometimes get a little cloudy, and you always want to reconstitute it with backwater. Okay, some people get confused, and this happened recently with one of my followers who reconstituted with straight acetic acid, and that won't ever work. Plus, it would probably not feel very good when you injected it. So you want to use backwater. Yes, you absolutely want to refrigerate it to preserve it. And with AOD, because it does gel and it is temperature sensitive to gelling. So I know I said refrigerator, just hang in there with me. But once you put it in a syringe, it has less liquid to sit in and it's going to gel quicker. So it's not one that I would say to preload. And what you can do is load the syringe and then kind of roll it between your hands like a piece of Play-Doh. And let it get to room temperature. If it won't load up in the syringe because it's so gelled, then that's when you want to add some acetic acid. And people get confused on this as well. 0.1 to 0.2 milliliters, okay, on a 100 unit syringe. That is like literally, you see the little tick marks on a syringe, if you can imagine this. And the first number you see is 10. So you want to put it at the 1 or 2 mark, little teeny tiny amount. Okay, not the 10 or 20 mark. People get confused by that. If you have more questions on that, email me. Okay, let's see. How are we doing on time? Ooh, okay. We are running out of time. Let me do a couple more and then I'm going to shut this down. Let's see. Oh man, can I relate to this? You mentioned once that KPV and Cardiolax helped with range of motion. I also have frozen shoulder. I'm almost done with one round of Cardiolax, 30 days and 4 weeks of KPV. If my range of motion isn't improved, should I do another cycle of Cardiolax in a month? How do I know if it's worth continuing for me? Okay, so let me be really clear on this. The Cardiolax and the KPV, and I actually did CLO and Cardiolax together, which I would highly recommend doing because it has the BPC and the TB in it, and it has the GHKCU. So that the CLO stacked with the Cardiolax is the gold standard, in my opinion, when it comes to this particular thing. But I had had a PRP shot. That's what really helped me get out of the pain of it because it was pretty painful. And then after my PRP shot, I did a 12-week cycle of CLO with Cardiolax. And that's what really got my full range of motion back. But it doesn't happen overnight. You have to do the right stretching and all the things with it. But that's what really got me out of frozen shoulder. But I did have to go one step deeper with that and get the PRP shot. Okay, let's see. Let's do a couple more. Okay, what is the best peptide stack for cellulite, specifically on butt and thighs? Would your new serum work for this with peptides or on its own? Get us summer ready. Okay, I love this. I'm going to be super honest. True cellulite, I don't know that there's a lot of peptides that are going to really break up that fat, fascia, if you will. So I'm going to approach this more from leaning out because I don't want to overstate and make promises that, oh yeah, this will help get rid of the cellulite. So one of the things would be the growth hormone peptides, the morellins, the ipamorelin, tesamorelin, or the ipatesa blend, ipa-CJC blend. Those help build lean muscle mass, which will help you burn fat, which will help you lean out. Other ones that will help you lean out are 5-amino-1, AOD, 9604. Those are typically, I get better response for those more in the midsection. The GLPs are going to help with weight loss. You just want to make sure you're eating enough protein so you're not losing muscle, because if you're losing your muscle on that, it's going to make the fat look worse, okay? So you want to be building the muscle. So the best thing you can do is start with really good nutrition, high lean protein, be in the gym strength training, and you know, layer in a growth hormone peptide to really help with that fat loss. And then I would say, as far as the serum, what I love about the serum is that it has SNAP 8 in it. And so when I put it on my face, I first started using it, I was like, it really does kind of have this tightening effect. So I do use it like on areas that I want to look, or I want it to look firmer. I even will use the derma roller on my thighs and leg area and put the serum on that as well. And that will definitely help stimulate collagen and elastin. And then you get that GHKCU and that SNAP in there, and it's even more effective. So it's not a miracle worker, but you will see some improvement. Also, just in general, your skin being in the best place it can be in with things like GHKCU on its own or the Glow Stack is really helpful for that as well. So all these things combined, you know, you're not going to see like overnight change, but you're going to see these really beautiful things, beautiful regeneration happening over several months. I also think it's really important to take pictures. Shout out to, I think it's Shauna that posted this. She posted a before and after of GHKCU, what her experience was with her skin, and you can tell the difference. So it does work, but sometimes we forget where we started. So I would take pictures and then kind of do some before and afters so you can say, oh yeah, look, I really did have some improvement, okay? Okay, so I think that's where we are going to end today. If I didn't get to your question, just know that I will. I'm going to do another round of this in a couple of weeks. So if it's something that's super pressing that you want to know right away, if you're part of the school group, you can message me there on the school group directly, or you can email me. My email is in the show notes. So don't be shy. Reach out. If you have emailed me and I have not responded, please know it just got lost in a sea of emails, or it may have gotten into my junk email. I just caught a bunch of emails recently that went into my spam folder because I obviously wasn't checking it. So I'm not ignoring you. When I say that I love getting your emails and I really do want to respond to you, that's very genuine on my part. But sometimes, you know, I might get 50 questions in a day and one might get missed in the sea of emails. And that's just for West Wellness. That's not even considering the Peptique side of things. So I really am trying to get to all of you and all your questions. And I do love getting them. So if I didn't get to it, you don't want to wait till the next Q&A, email me. The other thing, I do have a new peptide guide that we worked really hard on that's updated. It's way more extensive than the original one. So if you have an older copy, email me and I will send you the new one. I got a bunch of emails last week on that, which I was so happy because that means you're listening and you're getting the message. So I think that's it, guys. Just as always, I so appreciate each and every one of you. This space is an interesting one, to say the least, to be in at this point in time. And we're all in this together. And so, yeah, so just so, so grateful that I get to do this and I get to have this great community surrounding me while I do it. So until next time, everyone, have a blessed day.